Hi, my name is Robin, and today I'm interviewing Stuart Davidson on our Educators Matter series. Welcome, Stuart.
Hi.
Today we're going to be talking about brain-based parenting. Now, that sounds very complicated, Stuart.
Well, it's actually quite easy, but basically the two psychiatrists, John Bayliss and Dan Hughes, worked together to work out that there was a structure in how people parent in terms of how the brain operates. That structure is related to the chemicals that situations create in the brain, and these situations then have a response by the parent or the child. So brain-based parenting is learning how to adapt the chemicals go into your brain so you don't over-respond negatively or you respond positively or whatever in the parenting connection. So it's quite scientific.
So you're using your brain rather than your emotions, which can get a bit out of control.
Obviously the emotions are part of the brain.
Yeah.
But we are the only species that I know of that can actually look at ourselves and say, I'm being silly here, or I'm being clever, or that was creative. Other species can't do that. So this brain-based parenting allows us to look at ourselves and say, what am I doing?
Yes.
And it has five domains of caring.
Okay, so what's the first one?
Okay, the first one is a parental approach system. This enables the parent to be close to the child without becoming defensive. And love feelings and trust are all related in a sense of safety. Now, some kids can make us feel unsafe.
And hate you.
Mm. And that closes off our brain response because we're conditioned to react.
Resist that attack.
To danger.
Yes.
So if the parent needs to be open to the child, they've got to understand that all the stuff that's coming from the kid is related to chemicals in the child's brain, and they're picking it up, and that will create the same kind of chemicals in their brain.
Right.
So if you have a little baby and it's googling and laughing at you and smiling, you tend to do exactly the same back. Or if the baby is sad, you tend to do that and make the baby happy. And when you get a reciprocal
response.
Then that sets up a parental approach structure. But if you've got an adolescent who's highly stressed, his brain's full of cortisol, he's had a bad day at school, and he comes home and he's jumping all over the place because he's full of cortisol, he's banging things and smashing things. The only way to handle that is for you to calm yourself down first. Help the kid, divert the kid into an area where he can do the limited amount of damage to himself, other people or property, and then start self-regulating them with your brain. Just as we calm the baby down by cuddling it and singing and so on, that's how you calm the adolescent down.
Okay.
Now, interestingly enough, there's a system in our body called the upper vagal system, which bypasses the fight, flight, or freeze system. And it's linked between, it's a nerve between our heart and our brain. And a guy called Stephen Porteous calls this the polyvagal nerve system. But the upper vagal system, if you sing and you're happy, you create oxytocin and dopamine in your brain and it transfers to others in the immediate environment.
So that's interesting, like in a happy situation, like a party situation, celebration, people singing happy birthday, that's that transfer, that's an example of that transfer of oxytocin, which is the natural.
Yep. And they have done studies of depressed people, putting them in choirs, in church choirs.
Yes.
And the church choir sings and stuff, and they've measured them before and after, and the oxytocin level in their brains is higher afterwards than it was before.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
We know that that our brain functions on a chemical basis.
Yes, and in the same way, in a work environment or a family environment, when one strong personality is on edge, that can infiltrate the whole thing.
So the next one is the parental reward system, which we've touched on, and that makes it possible for the parent to experience pleasure from parenting. Now, co-educators and educators mostly don't think about this, but really, we're parenting because we like it. We're looking after kids because
sure.
we like it.
Sure.
Not because we're getting massive amounts of money. It's because we like it. And
well, you couldn't do it if you didn't like it.
Mm. And so activating with these kids and interacting with them sets up in our brain a thing called the mirror cells. The mirror cells are in our body and to keep us as a species safe. So if I give you a bit of food, your brain lights up with pleasure about the food. But if you see me eating food, your brain also lights up, although you didn't get any, because you associate the activity of the pressure of food
with pleasure.
With pleasure. So what we have to do is to interact with our kids, and we think pleasurable and happy thoughts,
okay. And
they pick it up.
So really being conscious of that when a parent might be, or a co-educator might be in a negative mood,
you'll
that is the
influence
that, you can do.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I can remember being in a youth activity session in a sexual assault service, and I listened to this kid for about an hour and a half, and I tried all things, kind of things, and I got nowhere. And I had to walk out and say to my secretary, say something happy to
me.
Yes, you know, because I was aware that that kid was giving off so much unhappiness and stress that it was affecting me.
Yeah.
So our intentions affect how we react. So if you intend to be positive, no matter what the kid does or says to you and stuff, don't go with what they're saying and that. Say to yourself, I'm curious about why this kid's so sad. I'm curious about why this kid's so angry. And keep yourself in a calm space, because your mirror neurons will transmit that back over.
Yeah, so that's interesting. I'm curious about, rather than that sort of verbal attack of, well, what are you screaming at? And it becomes a slanging match.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm curious about
that. Nothing happens by accident.
No.
Now, the thing that makes a kid angry and difficult might happen an hour before or 2 hours before, and they had to contain it until they got to a safe environment, your placement. When they get home, then they let it go.
Yes.
You know?
Or a text or an email or something where they can vent whatever's upset them. Mm,
now, the next system is the parental-child reading system, and this supports the ability of the parent to understand and empathise with the child's inner experiences. Okay, so you want to attune and empathize with the child so that you're creating up dopamine, which is a pleasure chemical, and oxytocin, which is the human support chemical. So you need to read the child's non-verbal expressions and their movement. So a calm kid moves slower than
a hyperactive
kid.
Yes, one that's agitated, yes.
Yep. So when you read that, you receive the non-verbal information, you think, what's the best emotional reaction that I can give? And then you tie your perception to a not to a defensive reaction, but to a trust and reward reaction. Because initially, as human beings, we all react negatively. So if somebody's hyperactive and jumping and screaming and shouting and stuff, we go into defense mode automatically. And then we're reinforcing that behavior.
Mm.
What we have to do is go back and say again, I'm curious about what caused
this. What's triggered that?
But it wasn't me. My job is to calm it down.
And what would then be interesting is when you've got multiple children, let's say two or three, and two might be happy, but one might be quite sad, or vice versa.
And in a case like that, I would say, get the kid that's sad moving.
Yes.
Get them to do skipping or jumping or something like that, because movement releases cortisol in the brain and gets oxytocin and dopamine working.
Yes. And it's why the children who do sport and basketball or running or walking or whatever are doing so well.
We had an educator who had several kids in the family, and none of the kids wanted to be near this little boy in the mornings when he woke up. And all we did was we got the little boy to understand when he got up, his first job was to skip for a minute, and then he could go and have a shower and stuff like that. And she found that after a couple of days I'm doing that, he ate his breakfast, he wasn't arguing with people, he improved in the school bus, all that kind of stuff, because he got rid of all the worries and so on that he was dreaming about in sleep, all his negative stuff, by skipping hard.
Interesting, isn't it?
So you have to be able to read the kid. And you have to be able to make meaning about what they're doing, okay, and what they're saying. So that's it. Your way of looking at the kid and taking meaning from their behaviours and experiences is part of being an adult. So they're just reacting.
To
but you,
you
can see,
yes,
perhaps, the reasons behind the reaction. And sometimes you might just say, I'm curious about that. Have you had a bad day at school?
Yeah, what's happened today to make you sad or to make you angry?
Because,
or,
once again, nothing happens by accident.
No.
Kids are not naturally horrible or naturally happy. There's always a reason
trigger.
For it.
Yeah. A trigger.
Now, if you're a stressed out parent, the story that you're going to make about the behaviour are going to be black and white and polarised.
Mm.
That kid needs logical consequences. That kid needs, sorted out.
Yeah, well, they won't say logical consequences. They'll say sorting out or
but
punishment or something.
Meaning is intrinsically tied to our emotions and our behaviours. We had a little girl who was so frightened of her educator that she used to urinate in cups in the bedroom. And the educator thought she was weird and bizarre. Didn't apply the meaning to why is the kid frightened to go come out and go to the toilet.
Mm.
And it was because the educator had people in the house that scared the kid.
Mm. Probably strangers that she didn't know, yes.
Well, she may have known them, but the point was that the kid was saying to her non-verbally,
I'm
comfortable.
Scared. Yeah.
And she wasn't picking that up.
Yes.
So we need to be in a receptive state, and we can only be a receptive state if we're calm and we're relaxed.
Mm.
And now Bayliss and Hughes talk about this being block care. If you go with your own feelings and go into defensive mode, you're blocking the care relationship.
Ah, that's where it came from.
Okay. So and finally, the parental executive system is a part of the brain that plans and thinks and coordinates. One part of the brain is like a traffic controller. It makes everything in our bodies work, our breathing, our skin, our immunity system and stuff like that. Our ability to regulate our internal states and monitor how we view things or how we feel about things really helps the parent-child connection. So it's not about us getting a smile back from the kid or getting a growl back from the kid. It's about us understanding that particular kid has things to learn yet, and it's your job to teach them.
And that's patience, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and that's what we call our kids
educators. Yes.
They are educating children in the necessary skills you need to live. Okay.
Yeah.
It's relationships.
Mm.
The whole thing works on a relationship.
But it's also educating themselves about all this, isn't it?
That's
because,
right.
When you explain it like that, you go, oh, yeah, well, that makes sense. And, oh, yes, they're going to pick up on my moods or my reaction, or I'll pick up on theirs. But as you're saying, you're blocking the care if you jump into the putting it onto the child. Oh, that child needs reprimanding or discipline or whatever.
Exactly.
You're actually blocking the care that is ideally will fix the problem anyway.
Mm. And if educators can remember, it took a long time for these kids to get to where they are. And most of the behaviour was related to a response they got when they're little that worked at that particular time.
Yes.
Throwing a tantrum helped them get space to work out what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, throwing a tantrum when you're 3 is a lot different from throwing a tantrum when you're 13.
Yes.
But the kids haven't learned any other responses.
Yeah, and probably they're not, for some, wouldn't have grown up where there was that happiness and lightness and
fun. Yeah.
So
you need to always be aware
that nothing happened by accident. The kid learned that response
yes.
to cope at that time, and it worked at that time. Your job is to give them different kinds of responses.
Yes.
And that's why I say we don't use logical consequences. We're talking about different responses.
Yes. And the for a lot of these children, the educator, the Kentish educator, is not their first educator yeah. or carer. They might have been in
10,
15.
Very likely, yeah.
So,
but we're hoping our educators will fix them, though,
yes,
by gluing them in the one spot.
Yeah, what worked in the last one.
I can think of one of our educators who I remember hearing her say to a 13-year-old boy, well, I don't like that, and I know you're going to do it to try and break the placement, but I'm here with you, and I'm going to stick with you.
Yes.
You know, and she was quite clear. She understood why the kid was doing it, and when she told him why that she understood, he stopped doing it.
Yes.
Because, hey, wait a minute, I don't need to break this one down.
Yes, this
she's
one.
She's not chastising
this
me.
This one's different.
She's not pushing me. She's just nourishing me.
Yes, yes, yes. And that's a really big step for a child, isn't it? So really, I mean, to summarise it, that responsive I'm curious about, you know, why you're doing this or why what's happened today that has brought this behaviour on, and not blocking the care. I think that's that what you do, or the educator or the parent's response can block the care that you're really intentionally trying to give, but you're getting caught up in the stuff.
Yeah. And if people can remember that we're chemical and electrical beings, and if you cut the plug, the electricity, there's no spark and there's no creativity.
Yes.
And if you allow too much of the wrong kind of fuel, cortisol, into your brain,
yes,
your effectiveness and efficiency will, whether you're aware of it or not, will be limited.
Sabotage it, yes.
You just don't have the same amount of options available to your brain for a response.
Yes, very interesting, Stuart. Another great session. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay.